Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is the program. Well, first of all, we're trying to reach our. I think I hear him in the background.
My co-host,
Don.
How are you
Don,
doing,
is
sir?
That you?
That's
South
me.
Carolina's there? Okay, this is on point.
North Carolina, where black people are actually working.
Is that right? Oh, that's rare because we don't allow them to work here in Minnesota. Don, yeah, I understand. I know you're in route there. What do we have today? What are we taking a look at today?
Well, we're going to take a look at the Council on Black Minnesotans. Also, there's been a notice put out that the Prayer Center in North Minneapolis is on the verge of losing their lease because of non-payment of rent. And if you recall, Mr. Edwards, the Prayer Center actually went into full tornado mode on the morning of May 23rd at 7 a.m., giving out food, clothes, diapers, milk, formula, eggs to people that need it. They were in the first persons, but yet they were not included in the dissemination of money from the Minneapolis Foundation.
Right. This is the Prayer Center that you're talking about, Don.
Yes.
Story. This morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune up here in Minnesota. Talking in terms of they received a 30-day reprieve, but the landlord, Mr. Redding, has indicated that he either wants her to pay a couple $100,000 or get out of the building and et cetera. Your point is well taken. I was always wondering why Mr. King and others did not include, or the Minneapolis Foundation did not include the Prayer Center, given the excellent and yeoman job that they did to serve community. Long before there was compensation per se. But the word is that she will not be able to raise the necessary money, and the intention is to close the operation down. Now, what is your political take on why they were determined to be persona non grata in receiving recovery money?
Well, I just think that she went ahead and she had a mission and had a plan, and you know, she's not really in line with the usual suspects in North Minneapolis, and they unincluded her, for lack of a better word, Mr. Edwards. And it's the same thing they did to Elam Housing. If you recall, Elam Housing, well, let me back up. In North Minneapolis, there are no black transitional housing agencies that handle transitional housing. Elam Housing went through and they spent over $200,000 housing us, basically, during the tornado, and actually went broke. And they weren't included in the bottom line. And if you remember, every time Sue would get up and speak at the North Side Community Response Team meetings, you know, the leaders there were kind of proud. And she'd have detailed reports on how much money went out, just in detail to the last penny. And this is something still the Northside Community Response Team has not provided to us or to the general public at all.
And I think it's important that people understand, both the domestic and international audience, that the transitional housing went broke. They spent every penny they had in facilitating and housing and sheltering the victim of the tornado. And it was amazing for me to watch week after week, meeting after meeting, the kind of disregard that was shown by the power brokers of the tornado relief team towards her. And I think it was by early August, first week in August, that they knew that the organization was broke. This was at the same time that Scott Gray, by the way, Scott Gray's organization was the last organization to have transitional housing for African Americans. They lost that program, you know.
Yes.
And I well remember how, you're right, there was this kind of disregard, disrespect, kind of frowning as Sue would talk in terms of what she was doing. Always had documentation. Every meeting I was at. And I was at every one until the very last one this past month. She would provide a report with audited numbers, addresses, names, and et cetera. And it was quite clear that that's not what the Minneapolis Foundation wanted.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell that, Mr. Edwards, up to this point, because I was a little shocked. We had a programming meeting yesterday, and I hadn't saw this article yet, but about 5:30 this morning I got up, and, you know, this was blasted on the online on the Star and Tribune, and I said, well, what's going on here? these people, the parishioner fully participated. They participated more than the Minneapolis Urban League. They did not have their hands out for any money. She went in, Caputh gave her donations of food, and different agencies around town brought her food, clothes. There was not a baby in North Minneapolis that was affected by the tornado that needed formula because they got it there. It was not a baby that didn't need diapers because she gave it to them, made sure they had it. Matter of fact, Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11 all came by and did these, you know, reports about her. And, I mean, and her paperwork, it was stellar. She actually showed what went out the door, who came in the door, and what they spent out of their pockets, out of their coffers. I mean, her paperwork were detailed. Now, getting back to what you were saying about Sue with Elan Housing, you know, it was frowned upon when, like you said, when she'd bring her paperwork in showing dollar for dollar per person, the name, I mean, everybody that they housed, where they had them at, and how much money they spent. And still, Mr. Edwards, as you know, to this day, we do not have a detailed financial audit of anything regarding the tornado. Ergo, the blue tarps all over North Minneapolis after the freeze.
And by the way, we have, because we have a team that has maintained a visual count, moved through the communities. In the Willard-Homewood area, as an example, which is one of the more upscale areas in North Minneapolis, per se, there are still 52 tarps on houses and homes of people of color in that particular community. I'm just amazed. By the way, I have to say this. It is my understanding that the alternative paper known as, is it the Twin City Mirror or the Minneapolis Mirror?
Minneapolis Mirror, yes.
Yes, actually broke the story. And so once again, we have the Star Tribune, the channels and television stations forgetting to give credit for whoever it was that broke this story, because I received a call asking me did I know about it, and I said, I'm not a computer person, but we are told that it was the Minneapolis Mirror that broke this story about the prayer center. And they said pretty much the same thing that you're saying at this very minute. You know, it's really sad because, as I said before, we did some checking. We are being told that politically the prayer center will be forced to close its doors. It was not considered to be a quote-unquote team player as a part of the corruption. I have to reinforce, Mr. Allen, what you said down there in the Carolinas, from the Carolinas, is that they were in place at 7 o'clock, 6:30, actually, on the morning of the 23rd
right.
of May. She was up and running. She was feeding. I mean, everything that you've said, I mean, that's what was done. I've heard the statements made that has no relevance. She was not a political team player. End of discussion.
Yes.
And her program will be closed down in the next 20, 25 days. We need to get to, I don't know if we'll be able to do any telephone calls, Don, if you see.
Oh, yes,
but,
of course, yes.
The Lester Collins story breaks, and there's kind of been a lot of whispering going on and et cetera. Now, we had a couple chores that we took on ourselves after our very interesting conversation with a member of the Council on Black Minnesotans who was going to resign, change their minds, now said they needed 8 months. I understand we had authentic identification of the holder of the $10,000 contract. Is that correct?
Yes, we have gotten that. After some persistence last week, Mr. Edwards, a name has arrived at the top of the cream, as it were. Ms. Yvonne Ellis Wells.
Wells Ellis.
You are correct, Mr. Edwards. Yvonne Wells Ellis, who actually has received it for quite a few years, that $10,000 project grant for the MLK Day. And after some further digging, you know, Mr. Edwards, I saw coffee at the Concordia College, Engelhoff Hall last year. I saw some paper programs in black and white, and I remember a little printer company tag on the back, so I was able to track down some of the organizations or the organization that actually had printed those flyers, which told me that you know they wouldn't give me exacts or you know there's some confidentiality involved, but you know that was under $1,000 to print, you know, probably about 100,000 flyers, 100, 500, you know, up to 1,000 flyers. And so I'm wondering, where is this $10,000 going for the MLK? I've contacted the Spokesman Recorder, the Insight News, KMLJ, who all have done editorial promotion of the event, but have never, I repeat, never received a dollar in advertising for this particular event. And so my question, Mr. The young man yesterday, I mean last week that called us, one of the board members, my question to him was that, you know, who is the marketing company, the marketing firm? And it turns out that, you know, this is just part of the whole many Council on Black Minnesota's corrupt, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch your back type way of they were passing money around for a long time. And so with that said, you know, there is no plan of action. There is no promotion behind the MLK Day for 2012, nor was there for 2011, 10, 9, or 8, or 7. And if you look at the Council on Black Minnesota's website, at a marketing company, a credible marketing company, if you have an event, you make sure at least a day, within 24 hours after that event, that you take down all promotions online. So now, Mr. Edwards, if you go to the State of Minnesota website for the Council of Black Minnesotans, they've been advertising since January 15th, 2011, not 12, 11 event that has already passed. And so,
I understand they did the same thing the previous year. Last year we went to the website and they still had
posted. And the year before. Yes.
January 15th, 2009. So,
yes,
now I understand that the average amount of money that was actually spent for the $10,000 grant that was given over a five-year period to the young lady in question, Miss Wells Ellis, was about $1,100 at best.
That is correct, sir. So you have someone walking away with, you know, at least, what, $8,500 or close to $9,000 in profits from this promotion. And you, so you're wondering, you know, well, they get the auditorium for free, basically. I mean, where, who are they? Are they paying an honorarium for the person that speaks? Are they, you know, what is this money actually going to? Is this person charging them, you know, some exorbitant amount of money per hour to plan a program, you know? And this is another thing that we need to look at really closely, Mr. Edwards, because these people that are doing this, number one, they're not event planners, okay?
Right.
The people that are vetting out the dollar, well, we have $10,000, any Joe Schmo could come off the street and win this $10,000 award. And if the people that are vetting the award don't know what goes into a particular event. I know that there's a gentleman on the board at the Council of Black Minnesotans. I call him up and I say, hey, you know, what are you guys doing? Where is your promotional? I mean, who are you talking to each week? Where's your press release to that? The first press release I had got from them, Mr. Edwards, in at least 5 years after looking into them, was the press release I got on November 17th announcing that Mr. Collins had been released. Okay, but still, we got no press release about Regina Seabrook. The board chair, who is more important, I think, and it's more significant that she resigned and her statement, quote, it was a big mess at the Council of Black Minnesotans, okay, which the mainstream media picked up right away after a conversation with her. So,
well, by the way, on the preparation for the King celebration, which is certainly very important and very precious to the African-American community around the nation and certainly here in Minnesota, there was controversy last year, Mr. Allen, you tend to forget. They had a situation in which they had made arrangements with a former state legislator, a Reverend Randolph Staton. And remember, there was a big controversy, and the invitation was withdrawn. And I can well remember that there was not a lot of transparency and clarity, though the gentleman who is on the board that called in last week, not the vice chair, but the gentleman who said he wasn't going to talk about Mr. Collins, I went back and examined on demand our programs of that particular period, which anyone is welcome to do. And he was quite vociferous in his attacks on Mr. Collins. Was that to position himself to get control of the $10,000?
Yes, I agree. All right.
Okay. Now, does in getting control of the 10,000, are you still there? Does that mean the entire package, if you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying, the entire package.
The whole kit caboodle, yes, yes. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, because the $10,000 grant is really is a package.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay. So
yes,
I understand that the person that called us last week forgot to mention that they now have control of the entire package.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well,
yes,
I understand there's no interim. I understand in your conversations and conversations with On Point. I understand that there is not an interim director. How do you do that, Mr. Allen? Did the legislative auditor give you an indication of their concern about that?
Well, no, I don't think the legislative auditor knew anything about it until I sent a request for information over to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, inquiring on how board members could be working in the office each day and how come no interim director was appointed at this time. And so they have not gotten back to me, but I know there is an emergency meeting tomorrow, Monday the 28th. Monday, I was so excited to get there, I'm thinking that's tomorrow. That's Monday the 28th, November 28th at 6 p.m. in the Griggs Building on University Avenue. And
mm-hmm.
So I was kind of interested about that, but they have not gotten back to me. And I had a board member to call me up. Her name is Miss Rosella. Out of respect, I don't know her last name, but I call her Miss Rosella. Had called me, and I had asked her. I says, "Well, since this $10,000 contract was vetted out, and it was vetted out to the same person last year, when Percy did nothing, don't you think it would be appropriate to recall that and reissue an RFP?" And she said, "Absolutely." She agreed 100%.
Well, Rosenbaum,
mm-hmm.
Rosenblum, he told us, he told you, me personally, he said that was a stupid suggestion. But then he also said, we went back and examined the on-demand. He also said in that same statement, in that same sentence, in fact, he said that he had problems with how it was awarded and et cetera, and the state law is very clear and specific about people who have, you know, fiduciary responsibility that would go ahead and do something when it's clear that there's been impropriety, if you will. So I was trying to understand the contradiction. I know that is it correct? We have been told on this end, was it correct that it was suggested to you that you asked for a meeting on this particular matter when the person that made the call to you already knew that a special meeting had been called? Were they trying to position themselves as a mover and shaker or what?
Yeah, I think absolutely, Mr. Edwards. I think that was the case because I had called Mr. Rosenblum, and I had asked him for a specific meeting surrounding this with not just myself, with some other concerned individuals.
Well, myself and others,
yeah,
correct.
Yes, yes, and others, and to make a fair and transparent, full disclosure type, you know, meeting and put it on board. And it was really interesting because I received the agenda for the meeting coming up on Monday the 28th, and that is Ms. Wells Ellis is on the agenda to actually to give them an update about what's going on, but yet there is no meeting or concern about, you know, what's happening, how it was vetted out, because I certainly, to this day, Mr. Edwards, they have not provided me a copy of the original RFP, a request for a proposal for the MLK Day for 2012, January. And so
now,
with that said...
let me just say, Mr. Allen, again, for transparency and for those that may give us a call next week or something like that, that you had direct, as a part of the commitment we made here on Point for transparency, you provided an observation and information to the legislative auditor and the attorney general's office and et cetera. I understand they were taken back, and did they not, sir, did they not ask you what was the timeline that you had requested that information?
Yes, yes.
And we discovered that you made it way back in May, is that correct?
In
for transparency.
It was in May. It was in May 2010. I had originally contacted Mr. Collins and via email, via telephone call, and asked him to what was his thoughts and his planning on the MLK
Day. Now, let me
Day
just correct you on something. Was it 210 or 211, Mr. L?
This was 210. For the two, I contacted him in May 2011.
Wow.
To ask him about the January 2012 MLK Day planning. And,
that's right, because Mr. Reynolds, or Reynolds was providing us with information, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes, exactly.
Yes, he was. And so
I was asking, and I asked to be put on the mailing list, and I actually was not put on the mailing list until 30 days ago. So,
it only took a little over a year and a half, almost. That's pretty good. That's progress.
Yeah. And so with that said, I have not gotten any updates regarding what was going on within the council as far as, you know, of course, you know, like I said, stated earlier, they really don't send out any press information or anything that they're doing. And so it's really hard to kind of follow, and it's kind of frustrating when you call them and you ask them, you know, give me updates on what's going on. You know, what are you currently doing? What is your plan here for 2011, going into 2012, and what is your, you know, what have you done? What kind of laws or bills have you presented to the legislators and tried to push them along, especially with the light rail debacle going on in North Minneapolis? I was really concerned about that, but you know, they have not had an issue. Are addressed any issues from unemployment to police brutality to unemployment, jobs. I mean,
right, you're absolutely correct. And in fact, the legislation that created the Council on Black Minnesotans 3 decades ago specifically laid out, and I think Mr. Chisholm, Lenny Chisholm, who called in last week and certainly gave some in-depth background on this, pointed out that their mission was quite clear and concise, if you will. And again, I know in the early part of the week, I went over a checklist. In fact, I still have documents that are 30 years old from when we were fighting as a community for the creation of the Council on Black Minnesotans. I can, in fact, remember we were a part of a special committee that actually endorsed Mr. Collins.
Wow.
To become the executive director, having tremendous faith and confidence in him at that time. That was over 30 years ago. But I was puzzled because Mr. Reynolds, I'm sorry, I keep saying Mr. Rosenbaum, said to us that we need to stop going back in history. And I have to say this on this program, Mr. Allen. It was history, and being able to go back and examine history and to examine how the Negro, the African-American, the sons and daughters of the African had been treated in Minnesota prior to a particular point in time that the Council on Black Minnesotans was created. Okay?
Yes, I agree.
Well, remember legislators, white legislators, because at that time there was only one when they really started talking about the legislation, and that was the Reverend or Randolph Staton. Many white legislators obviously had to join the debate and the discussion, and many of them had been educated by a committee of us that had marched over and gone over to the legislature and were lobbying, and they had been given bullet points, if you will. I hate to kind of say that, given some of the members of the Council on Black Minnesota. It may not be a good term, but we had given them bullet points, Mr. Allen, and I was impressed during that debate. Those many white legislators using those bullet points that had been received from the African-American community, from the Negro community, and so many of those bullet points, Mr. Allen, had to do with history. And so I was a little puzzled. In fact, my feelings historically were hurt when I heard the gentleman, Mr. Reynolds, indicate that it wasn't relevant for us to be talking about the past.
Yeah, that was kind of shocking. He would even say that in the first place, because it's important to know your history, because that gives you some kind of a sense of where you're headed, period. And with the Council of Black Minnesotans, you know, you have a group of folks that, you know, they're privileged to the Heritage Fund dollars. They're privileged to different state entitlements, like the what it says in the Minnesota State Statute 16C, which says that 25% of the, if a state plans on spending any money the following year, that 25% of those dollars should be earmarked for minority disadvantaged businesses and things like that. Mm-hmm. We've never heard the council even address 16C ever.
I never have, and I've been I've been a watcher of the council since its inception and before its inception, a number of years before its inception, because it took us a good 5 years to convince the Minnesota legislature that this was relevant and important and consistent with the so-called mandate of civil rights in the state of Minnesota, if you will. In fact, in many respects, it was the beloved Governor Rudy Perpich, a man who came from the Iron Range of northern Minnesota, who was one of the greatest supporters of that. You're absolutely on point, if you will, about what the mission is. And let me just say for our listening audience outside of Minnesota is that there was an interesting article, I think, before you left in your travels to the East, in which, and you said it right at the top of this program, in which the Star Tribune is now reporting the uncovering of all of these front organizations in the disadvantaged program. The same program that Mr. Lenny Chisholm was exiled from the Oversight Committee by the Department of Transportation because he raised questions about the troubling activities of so-called white female-owned businesses. You remember that?
Yes, I do.
And,
yes, I do.
Just at the beginning of the week, a heck of a story. They didn't. It was interesting. They didn't identify any black people as being victims, but they talked in terms of at least two so-called white-owned and controlled firms who had been disqualified and were allowed to slip back into the program a couple years later.
Yeah.
Now, the Council on Black Minnesotans is supposed to be on top of that, as well as the Urban League and the NAACPs. Or am I wrong? Am I mistaken?
You're absolutely correct on that, because what has happened is that what you're talking about there, I sat in meetings with Mr. Chisholm at MnDOT, in the MnDOT office, talking to Ms. Mary Prescott, Ms. Emma Corey, who both work for MnDOT, and Mr. Chisholm's gripe, I guess, or actually documented gripe, was that rather than give the awards to black contractors, the funds would go, or the awards would go to the white female-owned. And matter of fact, the National Association of Minority Contractors, another agency that has been pretty much quiet, just gave an award to a Hispanic woman at their conference a couple months ago in Washington, D.C., as Entrepreneur Business Person of the Year. And so still, you know, in all those areas, you know, minorities, especially black contractors, are dismissed and overlooked, are disqualified. And so getting back to the original subject, it's like, the Council of Black Minnesotans are supposed to be active and be a part of that cordial diplomatic relationship that will turn a different, well, it would make something happen. And they haven't made anything happen since that I know of that has been really significant. I mean, if you look at 2009 and 2010 when Ms. Martha Houghton Demick, who's the Minneapolis City Attorney, Assistant Minneapolis City Attorney and former African-American was the Family Services Executive Director, Lisa Jones. Okay, yeah, they gave money to the Gullit people, and I think it was in South Carolina, down here where I am. You know, and clearly, Mr. Edwards, the regulations, the statutes say that those dollars are for black Minnesotans, you know? So
yeah.
Then you have to ask yourself, okay, we have one of our flagship organizations, Minneapolis Urban League. While I may not agree with some of the things that Mr. Scott Gray is doing over there as president and CEO, still, he should have been able to lean on the Council of Black Minnesotans and say, hey, this is what's going on. I have to cut my staff back 30 hours a week. I have to cut pay by 10%, and we're suffering. We're barely keeping the lights on, even though we have a congressman renting a space in our business. which is her mainstay. Yeah, and so I never saw that cordial and diplomatic relationship with the Urban League and the Council of Black Minnesotans, Sabathny and the Council of Black Minnesotans, or any other black agency for that matter.
Right. You know, by the way, it's important for our listening audience that when we're talking about the set-aside program, the disadvantaged program that is now the source of significant investigation, the amount of money we're talking about is $950 million, so that folks don't think we're just talking about a couple thousand dollars and that we're complaining and bitching and whatever else. $950 million is at play in the St. Paul corridor situation. None of that money whatsoever is going to African Americans under any circumstances. So that's what Mr. Allen and myself are talking about. Star Tribune finally gets around to dealing with it. I've been writing about it in my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder for 7 years.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it since the inception of this program. And so just for our listening audience, it's not like we just became aware of it. It looks like that the other folks became aware of it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you have to look at it. And then you have, I was talking to Ms. Rosella. I says, well, what's going to happen? Are you going to turn into a social cabal like the African American Leadership Forum group, where they put out shiny magazines and, you know, they celebrate some local politicians, but they never really get to the grassroots and talk to the people that, you know, really might have a plan or even the people that are in need. And it's more of a social gathering. I mean, what would it take for a black Minnesota to get an organization that would go in and actively and diplomatically go in and talk with these state legislators and talk with these other people to say, hey, this is what needs to happen. Part of the problem is, Mr. Edwards, and this is what I talk to Mr. Chisholm and Mr. Tucker about all the time, is when they get in the room, they don't have a plan. Okay, so you have a situation where, you know, Mr. Chisholm might have a plan laid out to debundle state road contracts of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Well, they're not expecting anybody from the black community to leave a plan or talk about a plan and have it detailed the specifics on paper. So when Mr. Chisholm has a plan on paper that says, hey, let's do this, you know, Mr. Chisholm, a graduate from The Ohio State, worked at Cargill, is very detail-oriented. He has a plan. He gives it to him. He becomes rejected from the group. Okay. So
yes, he was. He was, in fact, ousted on a vote that included Kenya McKnight, the black activist in North Minneapolis, in fact, voted to oust him, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, she sat at the table also. You're watching this, but now just think, Mr. Edwards, and I'm gonna bring this together here real quick. Now just think if the Council of Black Minnesotans, like if Mr. Chisholm could have called them up and say, hey, Mr. Collins, hey, Board of Directors, I have this plan to solve the DVE program, and then that's going on now in 2012. It's going to be 19 years failure to actively include black contractors in Minnesota's bridges, highways, and roads in their wards, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if he went to them to have this plan, and they went over with Mr. Chisholm and with the Urban League to MnDOT and put it there, I think there will be a lot more significant outcomes. I think things would be a lot better. But what you have is you have, okay, we're gonna disenfranchise Mr. Chisholm because he has everything on paper. But we're going to go to our usual Negroes that never have anything on paper. We're going to go to the Minneapolis Urban League, and we're going to give them $150,000, and we're going to send out a press release, and we're going to have NPR, Channel 9, 11, and 4 say they're going to create a highway-heavy job program where they're going to hire all these black folks, shovel-ready jobs, and it never happens. Okay, so they paid him off $150,000.
Now, is this kind of the same thing that Mr. King did over at OIC, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
In a partnership with Dunwoody? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. You have a lot of folks. Now, Mr. King and I, Mr. Edwards, go back almost to 1989 when I worked at KMLJ as the Economic Development Director. You were the president of the board, and Mr. King worked at a nonprofit right next door, where we go step out and have conversations every now and then. So I've known him for a long time, but I mean, this is serious because black unemployment in Minnesota and Minneapolis in general is up around 20%. With the
22,
and then the state, I mean, the nation is around at 9. So we're looking at it really bad. And the first thing that needs to be done, if you would look at it, if they would somehow unbundle these contracts, and if they would include these black contractors in these awards, you would bring unemployment at least down to somewhere around, I mean, 8-9%. I mean, if that's
well,
just shovel ready jobs.
You'd certainly
yes.
knock it down from 22 to certainly around 10-9%, commensurate with the national average. You're absolutely right, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead.
But see, you have a problem with the Council of Black Minnesotans because they get their check from the same people that MnDOT get their check from. That's like the city going after the police department or the judge going after the police. It's not going to happen. Okay?
Right.
Like, you know, it's just not going to happen. And so, I mean, you have these agencies. And another thing I need to bring up is I sent a request for information into the Minneapolis public school systems. I know we're getting a little bit off track here, but this has something to do with the Council of Black Minnesotans here.
Well,
I am very
concerned. We're reaching near the end of the year. It's a summary. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm very concerned about a $200,000 contract, which someone from the public schools, I have a mole, and I hope they're listening because they'll never know who it is, where they awarded a $200,000 contract for this Community Standards Initiative, CSI Minneapolis, to a couple of people through Scott Redd, who works at the Minneapolis Public Schools with the superintendent, Bernadette Johnson. They awarded it to Mr. Al Flowers and Lissa Jones. I'm very concerned about people going into public schools teaching kids respect who don't have any respect, okay? And what do these two people have on the public school system? And I sent in a request, Mr. Edwards, because I want to know when the board approved it, since school board member Rebecca Gagnon, Dick Mammon, and Hussein Samatar will not answer my emails. I want to know when the school board approved this program and this funding. I know Scott Redd personally, and I've made a couple calls last week, before I went on vacation here for the holidays, to ask, can I get some details on it? Because I want to know all.
Well, Mr. Allen, let me kind of help you here. Let your co-host kind of help you on that one. That's interesting. Because I can tell you when it happened, and I can tell you how it was done. Now, I think one of the reasons that some of the board members are reluctant to dialogue with, they see you as somewhat of a problem, you know, and a threat. The contract was hidden in what is called some supplemental issues and items, and it was hid deep in these resolutions and et cetera. And in fact, according to a source that I have, that inside of the board, inside the board now, we're not talking about somebody out on the street corner on Plymouth Avenue, et cetera, that what happened was in the closed session, the CSI piece came up and came out, if you will, and there was difficulty in explaining what it was, and then there was discussion that went along the lines of we don't want to get blindsided like this. But there was an agreement. There was a tacit agreement that it when they went into the regular board meeting the next day, that Tuesday, in other words, that meeting would have taken place on a Monday. When they went into the public board meeting, they just had it buried in a number of items. If you ever, you've been to a couple board meetings, you have like these supplementals, and you have probably 500 or 600 or 700 contracts, right?
Yes,
the CSI was buried.
Yeah, well, we're going to unbury it. Hey, Mr. Edwards, I just want to let you know that I have the show going for another 51 minutes here, the full hour and a half, because we have a lot to talk about, if that's okay with you. But I need to go through security real quick.
I'm going to have to cut away at the hour mark, you do what you've got to do, and let's see how we can hook back up.
I'll try to figure back up on the other end.
All right, and I'll finish up on the school district piece. All right,
thanks, sir.
Okay, all right. Mr. Allen has had a cut away. He is in travel, if you will, and he's now in a situation where he has to clear security, if you will, and customs. And hopefully he will be able to get back to us in the remaining about 20 minutes that we have left here. We have a previous engagements, if you will. In fact, we would basically have 20 minutes. And what we, Mr. Allen and myself, were talking about was a contract that was consummated by the Minneapolis Special School District Number 1 for a program called CSI, Community Streets Initiative, blah, blah. Figure allegedly was $200,000, according to what Mr. Allen just said. There is public documentation, but you'll have to know where to go to find it. You'll also have to know the date. And I'll give you an example for those of you that are looking in and in the chat room and et cetera. The date of the consummating of the contract happened on the same evening that the first group came to protest the removal of the basketball coach at Minneapolis, Henry. And in fact, what had happened, the board had already calculated that there would be enough of a disruptive atmosphere, if you will, in the boardroom at 8:07, and that as an outgrowth of that, when they passed the supplementals and all the other contracts and things that they have, that people would not be paying any attention, even though there is a copy of said document that is always on the table as you come in the door at the boardroom at 8:07, if you will. What is that, the John B. Davis room or whatever? People did not realize, of course, did not have the interest or the time. As we said before, we repeat our exchange with Mr. Allen, is that our in the board preparation meeting the previous day, a board member caught the particular contract, happened to raise the question about it. Information started to be imparted, if you will, and the decision was made that it was not necessarily an item. Now, to show you how this thing took on a political context, if you will, is that the Democratic councilman in the first ward, from over there in the first ward over there in Northeast, was at a meeting at Edison High School, where the program is being implemented out of, as we somewhat speak. And the councilman made official inquiry both to the superintendent's office as well as to the Office of Public School Security about the presence of some individuals at a meeting that particular night. The councilman has a young daughter, who goes to school at Edison, and he was quite concerned about the presence of individuals that were apparently involved with the CSI program that Mr. Allen is talking about. Again, that is the councilman from the first ward, City of Minneapolis, DFLer, made official inquiry, if you will. My understanding is that since the board's official action, because they had to explain to him what these folks were doing in the school, if you will. This also came at a particular period of time when there were a couple of homicides in our city of young people, including a 16-year-old, and there was a serious confrontation at Edison. Edison was locked down, and then about a month later, Edison was locked down again as an outgrowth of confrontations and et cetera. Now, this is considered to be unhealthy because there is currently another program inside of Edison. There are some of you out there who sit in the chat room and look in on the programs or call them up on demand and listen to these conversations. There is a specific program under the auspices and management of the University of Minnesota dealing with psychological development and mental health. And I'm not sure the CSI people that were given what they thought to be a contract at Edison, they also thought they were going to get one at Henry. They even talked in terms of getting something at South High School, if you will. None of that is at play. And it comes at a time when a man by the name of Bruce Bork, who was the controller, if you will, for the tornado recovery monies, was supposed to be the fiscal agent for the CSI program, but a shift was made and the fiscal agent became the former head of the Urban League, using his title as a minister of a church that he has in North Minneapolis. That would be a Reverend Clarence Hightower, who is also the executive director of the CAP program in Ramsey and Washington County, which is two counties east of Hennepin County, basically taking in the city of St. Paul and Washington County, county seat being Stillwater. And what happened was, because of the political muscle that was at play, Superintendent Bernadette Johnson felt that she had a certain level of comfort, if you will, in allegedly awarding this contract. Since that contract was awarded, by the way, her right hand, her chief individual, has taken retirement, if you will. He'll be leaving the district at the end of this month, as I understand it, wrapping up his affairs, if you will. He was also very much involved with the awarding of the SES contracts that have been the source of much discussion in our communities over the last couple of years. Again, these were contracts to deal with our special education and et cetera. People were not cognizant of who was actually given the contracts and then would hand the contracts off to friends and relatives and et cetera. In fact, the tornado relief program or funding actually used the SES model as it pertains to making sure that friends, associates, and others were the beneficiaries of the tornado relief money. Well, that's the same thing that happened with the SES. It was supposed to be what was to happen with the CSI. We understand here at On Point that the CSI contract and process is under review, if you will. That the Office of Legal Counsel for the school district had to make a response to the State Department of Education. And I understand, for those of you that listen in and chit-chat with that crew who's involved with the CSI program, that the Federal Department of Education has expressed an interest, if you will, because lo and behold, the existence of the CSI program is being used in order to draw up support for a gang/peace summit in Washington, D.C. in April of this year. It's amazing the amount of documentation and et cetera that is being forwarded to the federal authorities to get them to endorse and fund this particular project. Though some say that the Black National Convention, headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee, will be doing it. That's, of course, totally untrue. The National Black Baptist Convention headquarters in Nashville, I don't think, have any desire or expectation, nor do they have the monies to finance the kind of conference that is now being discussed that will take place in April, or is slated to take place in April of 2012. This comes at a difficult time, by the way, politically for some in this city, in light of the rash of retaliation killings that have taken place here over the last 14 days as an outgrowth of some real misunderstandings, apparently, amongst individuals that have led to the deaths of individuals, the shooting of an African-American couple in cold blood on the streets of our city, if you will, after a funeral of an earlier victim shot 11 times in the vicinity of 44th and 33rd Avenue in South Minneapolis. You know, one of the things that's troubling, in that we'll probably be wrapping up in the next couple of minutes, is that we are definitely troubled as a journalist and an activist historian to find out that the most recent victim shot to death, gunned down in the streets of Minneapolis, has not been able to be interned. In other words, there is not the money to bury the deceased, Mr. Early, if you will. His wife is on life support in the hospital after being also shot in the head as gunmen fired at least 30 bullets into the vehicle that they were in that evening on that Saturday, if you will. And in many respects, a lot of this ties into some of the politics that are going on with respect to people saying that they are mounting efforts that need to be funded and they need to be rewarded for, quote-unquote, bringing an end to violence in the streets of Minneapolis. You know, that's rather interesting, if you will, because one has a sense that they're not doing that. Mr. Allen, is that you back with us?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Mr. Allen is back. And like I said, Don, I'm committed for the next 11 minutes. I've been doing a kind of a critique, historical critique of the big CSI program, if you will, and some of the problems that they're now running into, some of the politics, some of the shutdowns, lockdowns, as we call them, legally at Edison High School, where it appears that's the only place the CSI program has been put into. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I just think that once the parents catch wind of what's really going on, the general public, the taxpaying public, that I think they'll put the whole kibosh on the CSI program. And I'm really curious about why no dollars came out of that Northside Community Response Team for this program, because that's what it was originally presented. You know, so,
yes, it was. We were both at the press conference at the Minneapolis Urban League. I know I was there in the basement as the presentation made. In fact, there are pictures in of the black papers and the major daily showing the press conference and the announcement. If I remember correctly, I saw Congressman Ellison. I saw Louis King. I saw the person known as Alfred Flowers. I saw Superintendent Bernadette Johnson. You have the same recollection?
Yes, I do. I have that same recollection of that whole that big fiasco they had in the Urban League this summer.
In fact, let me just say this for those that were going to shoot us on that particular occasion and meeting. If you remember, Congressman, our beloved Congressman Keith Ellison was on crutches. You remember that?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Yes. He had suffered a knee injury while exercising, and in fact, that particular afternoon, as we had that big press conference, if you will, to announce the implementation and activation of the CSI program, that announcement was being made. I'm like you. I'm puzzled why there wasn't a more public vote by the Board of Education, the district Board of Directors. I'm not understanding why the eight members did not speak to the importance and the relevance of the program to serving the greater need. Is that appropriate Christian term, Mr. Allen?
That is appropriate. The greater need. Greater need is appropriate. Yes.
And I'm just wondering why we haven't, you know, why we were not serviced with that, if you will. Because I think you really kind of touched on something, kind of opened Pandora's box, because nobody wants to talk about the CSI program now.
No, not at all. They certainly don't. Certainly don't. Seems pretty strange.
I just can't understand it. I'm like you. I wonder how come the program was not made available through the Tornado Relief Fund. Because let me tell you something, and of course you're gone. Let me tell you about a conversation that took place yesterday between an individual you and I know, and what that individual was talking to another individual and was talking in terms that they were on their way into North Minneapolis to pick up $3,000 cash money.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to understand that with that kind of money just laying around, you know what I mean? I mean,
yeah,
homeboy said, yeah, you know, all the way, and then told whoever he was talking to that he loved him and to talk to you later, baby, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. They can go pick up $3,000 like that. They need to figure out how to get them blue tarps off the house, right?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, man, I mean, I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around the amount of monies that are out here. I mean, this is the day after Thanksgiving, and, I mean, homeboy is talking, and homeboy is on his way to pick up $3,000, man. I'm like, wow, you know. And on the other hand, the prayer center, which has been such an important force for good in our community, is basically being told it's going to be shut down.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know.
Don't make no sense
and
at
so
all.
And so I just don't have an understanding. And then I hear people getting checks for $10,000 for services rendered. Now, this is different from, you know, picking up $3,000 cash. And then people are using different names. Why do people use different names, Don?
I don't know. I was trying to figure that out, you know. It might be the locker in effect. I don't know. We got to figure that out one day. So.
maybe we'll, I don't know, be able to do that. Anything else we got, Don? Well, I know I have to get on out of here.
Okay,
Anything else that we may have missed?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything on today's show. You know, I'm broadcasting live from North Carolina, and you're back in Studio A in the McIntyre Studio. So I think we covered everything we needed to cover.
Okay. Now, by the way, you said something about the judges. We have about 3 minutes left. I just want to say this, Don, that there are some judges, particularly in the federal courts, that are not intimidated or impressed by Minneapolis, and as we've been reporting exclusively, it has to do with what will be his trial, which will probably start very early in 2012, involving corruption in the Minneapolis Police Department. And do you know that the federal courts have ordered the chief of police and other high-ranking officers, in fact, I think it took place last week, letting them know that they are the targets of a criminal investigation for obstruction of justice. Can you believe that?
Wow, no, I can't believe it. That's going to be good. I need to go be sitting over there every day. Nice, sir. That's going to be pretty interesting. Yeah.
Yes. So that's something that's happened. And there was a what is called in camera, where you have a closed session. The court closes and locks the doors, bring you in, the city attorney asked for that because I guess they're scared about all their business being told. By the way, just for the listening audience who, and particularly those with legal backgrounds, understand, all of this came out during discovery in the matter of Lieutenant Mike O'Keefe, who is suing the department for retaliation and discrimination and et cetera against him at the time he headed up the powerful Voltec unit. So these are things, again, are not being reported by a major paper. But anyways, Don, have a safe trip back. And we certainly will be looking forward to being able to attend, though we may be stopped outside of the facility. I'm not sure now. You know,
yeah.
Coming from the shooting range, as we were told last week. But anyways, I'm kind of looking forward to the meeting at 6 o'clock Monday evening in the Griggs Building in St. Paul. I'm kind of want to hear how these contracts have been lit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm very interested in figuring that out. All right.
All right, hey, man, have a safe trip, you and the baby, and we'll talk when you get back. And, again,
right,
this is Ron Edwards, my associate Don Allen. Mr. Allen talking to us from the Carolinas, if you will. Don, again, have a safe trip. Take care.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards.
All right.